All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. Yeah, I gotta say right at the top, before we get into anything else, I freaking love this movie. I've already seen it twice. I was never a huge fan of the John Wick movies. I like them. I like them plenty. But man, did I love this one. I am super excited to talk about it with returning co-host Sean Malloy from the I Must Break This podcast. And yeah, we got a great show for you today. And I want to remind you all, before we get into it, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can also find us on social media at Piecing Pod. So, John Wick, this is the story of the Keanu Reeves super assassin who some other assassins kill his dog, and so he goes on a multi-movie journey of killing lots of other people. He shoots millions of people in the head, maybe not millions, but certainly hundreds, multiple hundreds, get shot in the head or stabbed in the eyeball or throats sliced by their own knives. And I mean, it is so violent, but so funny and well done and just beautifully choreographed. And it's a wild, wild ride. So let's get into the conversation. But before we do, we do have the Golden Tiki back as a sponsor again today. So I want to let you know a little bit about the Golden Tiki. If you're in Las Vegas, it is the place to go. They were voted by USA Today as one of the top 10 best nightlife destinations in Las Vegas. They were also named one of the top tiki bars in the United States by the Food Network. They've got a bunch of rooms filled with all kinds of cool stuff, the great rum and mixed drinks. They're famous for their Dole Whip. They also have theme nights, DJs. The Swank Bastards play there a bunch, which I love those guys. They're awesome. And we all know I don't leave the house that much anymore, you know, unless it's to go to a movie or something. But I'm really looking forward to getting back over to the Golden Tiki sometime soon to check out Al and Bud's Oasis, which features two robotic parrots doing a dirty, like, comedy show. And the parrots are made with microcomputers, nanorobotics, 3D printing, and hand feathering. And their entire little show is put together by the bar's owner, Brandon Powers. And I'm sure it is a total blast to watch. It's got to be hilarious. So I'm really looking forward to getting back over there one of these days soon so I can check out Al and Bud's Oasis. So the Golden Tiki, thank you for being a sponsor. And let's jump into the conversation about John Wick 3 Parabellum. All right, joining us on the show again is Sean Malloy from I Must Break This podcast. Sean, thanks for being here again.
Hey, no problem. It's nice to be on an episode where I'm not talking about Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah,
for once.
You talk about Dolph Lundgren quite a bit, so it's good to give it a little break. Another action star here.
But I will say, there's actually a couple threads that do link the film we're talking about today with Mr. Lundgren. So I will, of course, be obligated to mention those threads.
I love it already. I am looking forward to those threads. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, before we get into any puzzle pieces or anything, John Wick 3 Parabellum, you actually requested to come on this episode. And so, you know, obviously you having a Dolph Lundgren podcast, you're obviously a big action movie guy. Is that why you're a fan of these movies?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, no, I think the, you know, when the first John Wick movie came out back in 2014, I mean, the trailers and everything, I mean, it looked awesome. It looked great. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't really know what to expect. And then when it finally came out, it was very clear, hence a lot of my puzzle pieces that I'll be mentioning today. I think it's very clear that the writer, the director, everybody who had a hand in this has an immense affinity for the action genre, especially the action genre from the sweet spot of the 1980s, especially Canon films. I'm sure you're probably familiar with Canon films,
but
yeah, it's very evident that they have a huge affinity for this. And I honestly feel that maybe a little bit the first one, but definitely the second and the third one, the one we're talking about today. Yeah, this film, they're certainly paying homage and tribute to the films that they grew up with loving. And so that's one of the reasons why I love this. And I remember when you put it out there about the big films that you were going to be seeing and the ones that you wanted to that you were requesting guests for, you know, of course I'll probably end up seeing Godzilla, and I'll probably end up seeing quite a few more films this summer, but I think the John Wick franchise is probably the freshest, best thing coming out in the action genre today.
Yeah, I gotta say, I've liked the first two, I maybe even loved, but man, did I love this one. I'll just get it right out in front. I'm still kind of blown away by how much I enjoyed this one. And you know, it's always been there for the first two that, like, wow, these are just filled with insane action sequences and just so inventive and so in love with the genre. And so, I mean, it's just great to see a series that is doing this and getting so well received. I mean, at the time of our recording, it's just the end of the opening weekend, and it's like doubled the last one's opening weekend. I mean, I'm glad that people are actually going out and seeing this.
You know, it's amazing for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's nice to see a rated R movie taking over the box office like it has been. You know what I mean? I feel like there was always kind of this idea. Well, it was certainly evident throughout the late 90s and early 2000s that if an action movie wanted to survive and make money at the box office, well, they had to water it down a bit, make it PG-13. Mm. And then when the DVD would come out, they would make it the unrated version. You know what I mean? And so, so it's nice to see a rated R movie doing as well as it is at the box office. And it's not just, it'd be nice to say that it's John Wick that kind of set this trend in motion, but it's not. I mean, I think when Deadpool came out, that surprised a lot of people. Then of course, when Logan came out, the last Wolverine movie, that was of course rated R. And so I think, not saying that the R rating was ever really the kiss of death, but I think it's nice to see that filmmakers are not shying away from it and are not afraid to make it R. And boy, oh boy, is I guess the entire franchise, but especially the third one, Parabellum, this is a hard R, man. So.
Oh yeah. They did not shy away from any of it. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. Yeah. One last thing I was going to mention, and then we'll jump into some puzzle pieces, is I'm particularly glad to have you as the co-host for this one, because I when it comes to movies, I have watched a million action movies in my days, but lately I don't really get out to as many action movies. I don't get, we all know that I don't get to watch old classics as much as I should. But I know that you are a big fan of action, and I think that you'll probably have like a really, you know, a lot of good insight into the world of action films with this.
Well, I hope so. I mean, boy, that's definitely, I got to live up to this, to this reputation you've given me. Can I just say, actually, before we get into this, I will say about Keanu Reeves, you know, Keanu Reeves has always kind of had this, I found that people either really love him or they do not love him, you know, because of his acting. And I will admit, you know, sometimes his acting, especially in the early days, is a little wooden. I would say I do honestly feel that I think he's gotten much, much better within the past 10 years. But I will say, if you look at Keanu Reeves's career, and this is something that I mentioned on a previous episode of on my show, but if you really look at Keanu Reeves and his career, it's really fascinating and amazing in a sense, because he has been at the forefront of every change in the action genre. And if you really think about this, if you go back to 1994, when he did the film Speed, okay, so the film Speed really, I mean, and can we just say also, Speed still holds up to this day. I mean, Speed is an awesome friggin' movie. but, you know, I will say one of the things that makes Speed hold up is the fact that it provided audiences with a regular action hero. You know, it was around this time, 1994, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, those were our quintessential action heroes. That's who everyone was looking at as being the action hero. And so then you had Speed come out, and, you know, Keanu was fit and everything, but he was not as muscle bound and larger than life as some of these other action guys were. And so you have Speed that came out, shattered box office records, and suddenly you had guys like Arnold and Sly kind of reeling from that a bit, okay, because you had audiences realizing, you know, we don't need this big muscle-bound guy to be an action hero. And then so if you look at the films that were coming out, they were all kind of trying in a weird way to kind of ape that that formula and that style. And so then if you go forward to 1999, you had The Matrix come out. Again, another film that that Keanu Reeves is headlining. And if you look at the films that came out post-Matrix, well, what are they all trying to do? They're all trying to copy and ape the style of The Matrix, you know, doing that bullet time and everything like that. And then so then if you jump forward to 2014, you have John Wick came out with just these insane fight scenes and these long, extended, choreographed gun battles. And what do we have going on nowadays? We have films that are, you know, copying that style. I mean, look at Atomic Blonde. Atomic Blonde is awesome. Let's be honest. I don't think we would have Atomic Blonde if it wasn't for John Wick. So it's really
it's totally it.
Yeah, so
totally
I think it's really just amazing in a sense. I mean, say what you will about Keanu Reeves, but the guy has been at the forefront of the action genre, and he has, I mean, let's just say it, he has reset and reinvented the action genre as we know it three times. So I think that right there is amazing. And can I also just say this last thing I'll say about Mr. Reeves, but the guy doesn't age. Like, what the hell? Like,
it's so true. If anything, when the first one came out, like, that was the hardest thing, is that he's so damn young looking to be a retired hitman, you know?
Yeah, and what is he? I think he's like,
seriously does not
age. I think
age.
He's like 54 or something like that, I heard, or something. I mean, it's
sounds about right.
Yeah, it's amazing, but he looks the same as when he did Bill and Ted. So
crazy. Yeah, absolutely crazy. Well, with that, why don't we jump into some puzzle pieces? What do you got for your first one?
So, you know, I kind of touched upon it briefly, but you know, so the director of this film is a gentleman by the name of I'm going to say his name wrong, but it's Chad Stahelski. And then the writer is Derek Kolstad. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think that these guys are, you know, they have a huge affinity for the action genre, especially the films of the 80s and the 90s. I mean, if you look at the first movie, they cast Kevin Nash, a wrestler, in a bit role. And the second one, they had Franco Nero pop up in a brief role. And in this one, I mean, my God, the main bad guy is played by Mark Dacascos, who I think a lot of people just thought kind of dropped off the face of the earth, because he was doing a ton of direct-to-video stuff, martial arts related, back in the 90s. But he kind of, I think he was still doing, he still to this day is doing some direct-to-video stuff. But the fact that they cast him as the lead bad guy shows that they, not only are they taking a bit of a chance, but they have an affinity for the genre, like I said. And so as I was watching this, especially that final act, it's probably more so mainly in the final act, but are you familiar with Bruce Lee's film Game of Death?
I am not, no.
Okay.
I've heard of it.
Okay, so yeah, Game of Death was the film that Bruce Lee was filming, actually. He got like about 100 minutes or so, or something, basically what I've read. He got maybe about 70 to 75% of the film completed, and then he unfortunately died at the age of 32. And so the film was incomplete, and they were eventually able to release it. Actually, the story behind Game of Death is oddly fascinating. But they were able to release it by reshooting some scenes and bringing in some doubles. There's even actually a couple scenes where they use a cardboard cutout, Bruce Lee, for some of the scenes. But basically, the premise of Game of Death is, okay, he is this, and I'm sure if you've seen pictures of it, if you've seen things on YouTube, it's the one where he's wearing the yellow and black jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically the premise is he is a martial arts master, and he is he basically approaches a pagoda. It's his legendary pagoda, and he pretty much has to make it to the top of the pagoda. And each level of the pagoda, he is to take on a number of villains and a boss. And so it's pretty much, I mean, it's a video game in a lot of ways, but I think the John Wick franchise, especially the third one, is a video game brought to life in a sense. Oh, yeah. But if you remember, especially in that final act, I think the writer and the director, they are certainly paying homage to Game of Death, because if you think about it, he is having to make his way up it's not a pagoda, but it's that glass building to meet the final boss at the end. And so, yeah, I think if you see Game of Death, it's pretty cool, because the final boss at the very end is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm. And seeing Bruce Lee square off against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, even to this day, it's a film that was made in 1973, wasn't officially released until 1978. But the way it's shot, it is... Talk about some amazing martial arts, but just, the scale of it. You have Bruce Lee, who is about half the size of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but it is an amazingly shot film. And so yeah, that's my first piece.
Beautiful. I love it. And you know what? I'm just going to kind of combine right along with that, because I was also going to bring up Enter the Dragon because of the whole mirror room situation. And the whole thing at the end of the movie, the big final fight. And yeah, I think they combine so well, and obviously this is a movie that combines so many, influences from, Asian, cinema. And so those are two perfect examples that kind of come together and show their influence so well on screen. And like a lot of the things you were just saying, that these guys are like clearly just major fans of this stuff, and they're not even trying to hide it. These are definitely homages more so than anything else. These guys are really trying to take the things that they love so much and put them on screen and just up the ante and try to do it in crazier, more hard R-rated ways, really. And I love so much that whole sequence that you're talking about and that I'm talking about as well here with the Enter the Dragon piece. But I love how many glass panes he's smashing through and all that kind of stuff as he's going through. It gets to be so comical, but while being like freaking dangerous hardcore action at the same time. It's really, really well done.
Well, it almost kind of reminds me of that scene in Wayne's World 2 where the where the guys are crossing the street holding the panes of glass, and you have Wayne, he looks at him and he says, boy, I wonder if this is going to come in handy at some point. And you know, when you see John Wick enter that room with nothing but glass, it's like, yeah, he's going to be smashing all of that up eventually. So,
yeah, but who knew how much exactly? That was like so much. It's so funny. Yeah, but that's great, though. That's hilarious. Right on. Well, you know what? I guess I just kind of very quickly went into my first one. But we might as well just come back to you, though. What do you got for your next one?
Well, you know, it's an excellent segue. You said the fact that the writers and the director of this have this huge affinity, and they're paying homage to Asian cinema. And yeah, that was my next one. Is, are you familiar with the film The Raid?
Yes, absolutely.
So, okay. So there's The Raid that came out in 2012, then its sequel, The Raid 2. And then there's another one. if you can handle The Raid 1 and 2, there's another one that's on Netflix. Actually, it was released back in October, called The Night Comes for Us. My God, talk about a total assault of the senses. I mean, that was probably the most violent, savage film I have ever seen. And I'm still reeling from it in a lot of ways. But yeah, some of the bad guys in Parabellum, John Wick Chapter 3, however you want to refer to it, were from The Raid. So if you remember at the end, some of the bad dudes who he faced when he was on one of the levels, if you will. One of those was the main bad guy from Raid 1. And then his partner was the bad guy from Raid 2. I don't know if you remember, but they were the two guys who were saying it was such an honor to be fighting him, if you remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Those guys were great. Yeah. What great characters.
Yeah, so the fact that they cast those two guys, like I said, it's very clear that that they've seen The Raid and they love The Raid. And, you know, I mean, it's those films, those Indonesian action films, and their effect is very clear. There's another one that came out that's also on Netflix called Headshot that has the same star and a lot of the same actors in that one. And, I mean, the fight scenes are done to a whole other level. I mean, it's funny because a buddy of mine said it perfectly. If you remember back in the 90s, everyone was trying to, we were seeing a lot of John Woo imitations, a lot of John Woo imitators, you know, and the films of John Woo have always kind of been coined or been referred to as a heroic bloodshed. And my buddy said, you know, these new martial arts films like The Raid and Night Comes for Us, it's heroic bloodbaths. I mean, we're talking, it's not just martial arts and gunfire. I mean, they are using machetes and knives. And I mean, it is just a total, like, I mean, it's almost in a weird way, not even action, but more horror, especially Night Comes for Us. I mean, my God. Yes. So
yeah, I don't watch as many of those kind of movies as I should, but my friend Q got me to watch The Night Comes for Us by comparing it to The Evil Dead. He was like, you're going to love it. It's basically like martial arts Evil Dead. And so he got me to watch the movie. And I was glad I did, because it was great.
Well, and I mean, just the fight scenes just go on. I mean, you know, I mean, and that's one thing that I think John Wick is, another buddy of mine said it perfectly, actually, the other day. I think the John Wick films are about as close as we're going to get here in America to having films like The Raid. You know what I mean? I mean, because we're just, I mean, our sensibilities are a little different, and our shooting styles are a little bit different. But I mean, if you look at those films, I mean, you have fight scenes that go on for 15 minutes on end. Whereas if you look at an American martial arts film or American action film, yeah, we'll have a martial arts sequence or a fight scene, but it's going to be edited and it's going to be cut. Sure. And it's not going to go on for as long as those films do. And I can certainly see the pros and the cons to both, but like I said, I think the makers behind John Wick, they're fans of The Raid.
Yeah.
So much so that not only are they paying homage to it, but they're going to cast some of the main fighters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of American action movies, my next puzzle piece, I think that these John Wick movies have, it's kind of amazing that they've been able to do this, but they keep upping the level of insanity, upping the level of fight scenes, the set pieces, the really taking things, you know, quote unquote, to the next level each time. And the only other series I could think of that does it that well are the Mission Impossible movies. And so my next puzzle piece is the Mission Impossible movies. I think each time they are doing new things that, you know, just they really just kind of blow away your expectations each time. And it's just kind of like, how are they possibly going to top this? And there are so many moments during the John Wick 3 where I was thinking, what the hell are they going to be able to do in John Wick 4 to find a new way for Keanu Reeves to kill people with his hands or a gun or a knife? Like, how are they going to find new ways? In the same way that I'm constantly wondering, you know, how are they not going to kill Tom Cruise in the next Mission Impossible movie? But yeah, so my next puzzle piece is the Mission Impossible series and the way they constantly outdo themselves each time.
Did you notice, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because did you notice how I watched both one and two before seeing three again, just to, you know, just to get in the mindset, get prepared, you know? And it's funny because as the series has gone on, the main character, Keanu's John Wick character, he talks less and less. I mean, almost so in the third one. I mean, he still had quite a few speaking lines, but He was more a force of nature in this one than he was in the first two. I mean, the first couple, mainly the first one, I'd say there was a little bit of character development there. But in this one, he is he's more the silent assassin, I would say, in this one. If you look at compared to the previous two.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. He's very far and few between his lines, but when they're used efficiently and effectively.
You know? Yeah.
He's got some great lines when they do pop up. So, what do you got for your next puzzle piece?
The 2007 film Smokin' Aces. Have you seen Smokin' Aces?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the whole idea of Smokin' Aces. Yeah, I mean, and actually, that's something I went back and watched again after seeing Parabellum. But yeah, the whole premise basically of Smokin' Aces is it's a huge ensemble cast. I mean, I was That's one of the things I loved about it is the cast that they assembled for it. You have Ben Affleck. You have her name is escaping me. She's a pop star. Anyway, it'll come back to me. But you have Ben Affleck, Ryan Reynolds, Jeremy Piven, Ray Liotta, and it's pretty much Jeremy Piven plays a magician who is pretty much, he's a Las Vegas magician who's fallen on drugs and alcohol, and he's basically become the main hit. Okay, so this huge payday for whoever kills him first. And so you have pretty much every assassin imaginable coming out of the woodwork to collect the payday and kill Jeremy Piven. And so you have a calm, collected assassin who uses disguises. Then you have some crazy batshit assassins who use chainsaws. And I mean, it really is out there, but it's a fun movie. And then Ryan Reynolds and Ray Liotta play the FBI agents who are on the case. But it's a fun movie, written and directed by Joe Carnahan, who I think is a great mm-hmm. voice of the action genre. But yeah, I just think the whole idea of having this eclectic, unique hodgepodge group of assassins all coming together for one goal, one mission, is very similar to what they're going for in John Wick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you brought Smokin' Aces to this conversation, because I had written down in my notes that there is another movie I could think of where like every other assassin has been sent to kill one, and I couldn't think of what it was. And that, I think that is exactly the movie that I was trying to think of. That's gotta be it. The one that was on my mind, but Carnahan hasn't done anything in a while, has he? I haven't seen him do a movie in a
Yeah,
while.
No, you're right. He hasn't done much. I know he tried doing a treatment for Daredevil, and Fox passed on it, but he had kind of a cool, unique take for the Marvel Comics character Daredevil, and they ultimately turned it down and said no. But that would have been kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see him do something like that. But definitely an interesting voice, though. And definitely glad that you brought that movie up, though, because that's a perfect puzzle piece. So I got a little bit of an offbeat one here. But my next one is the horror movie Don't Breathe. And the reason I bring this up is because it is the only other movie I could think of with as intense dog sequences. The dogs, Halle Berry's dogs in this movie, are just so freaking vicious. I joked on Twitter that I would love to see like a 90-minute documentary on how they train these dogs to do this. In Don't Breathe, have you ever seen that movie?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. Stephen Lang is amazing in that one.
Oh yeah, he's so good, so good. But those Rottweilers, it's so freaking scary. And as a big dog person myself, to see just what they're able to get these dogs to do in these like just intense freaking action sequences, that's pretty much the only other one that I could think of that's quite that intense. The only other one I kind of thought of was No Country for Old Men in that opening sequence. Don't Breathe was the first one that came to mind.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I gotta be honest, I don't really have any other fully formed pieces. I have a couple, small little elements or notes of mention, but yeah, my three main puzzle pieces were going to be Smokin' Aces, The Raid, or Night Comes for Us, whichever one you think it's more similar to, and then Game of Death. So
perfect. No, those are great puzzle pieces, and actually The Raid was one of mine, so I actually only have one more now at this point. So I might as well knock that one out, and then we can go into any other thoughts that you had. But that final puzzle piece then that I have, I kind of touched on it earlier a little bit when we were talking about The Night Comes for Us, but it's actually the Evil Dead series. And the reason why is because of something you actually were saying earlier, is about how the character just is, constantly like almost becoming, I don't remember if you used the word a cartoon character or not, but maybe I was just thinking that word, but the character is just becoming so over the top and crazy. And in the Evil Dead series, obviously Ash becomes more and more over the top as the series continues. And the John Wick universe is just expanding at a rate that it just has kind of no business in expanding. It could have so easily just been a very simple you know, straightforward hitman, you know, action movie. And it's just expanded and expanded in mythology and character, and the characters becoming more and more almost cartoonish. And I think all for the better, quite frankly. But yeah, that it reminds me of the way that the overall story grew within those three Evil Dead movies.
Yeah, you know, that's an awesome way of putting it. You know, what's interesting about this series is, I mean, I think you, when you go into it, you have to pretty much accept the fact, I think, that this takes place in another universe, in another reality. You know what I mean? Because I mean, it's pretty much, it's expecting you to believe and accept the fact that it, that it's in a world where every other person is an assassin.
Yeah.
Basically. And so, you know, and I think what the series did, which was really cool. And I read one review that, you know, disagreed and didn't like it. But what I really like is how the first one, you know, it's in the real world. And the first one, you accept it that, okay, you know, he was an assassin who's retired and he's kind of entering the world once again. And you're kind of going along with it. And then the second one, I think that was a wise move too, for them to set it up that way. Because then by the second one, by the time that came out, the writer and the director had a little more creative control over the project, as anyone would. I mean, if you really think about it, any franchise, after the first one hits, they sure. give... They give the director and everyone behind it a little more creative freedom. I mean, if you look at 1989's Batman compared to 1992's Batman Returns, Batman Returns is so much more of a Tim Burton film than the first one. And I think that's because they gave him the control. And you look at John Wick 2, one review I read said that the film, its head is so far up its own ass to where it's you know, completely ridiculous. And I think on one hand, I can certainly see that and sympathize with that. But then again, I think, like I said, it's in its own world. I mean, you have the suicide girls, basically, who are handling the phone lines or the phone operators and everything. Yeah. I mean, it's all done to, you know, give the film this this flavor and this style and this edge to, you know, kind of let you know, okay, this is not the real world. And I think if you can go along with that and realize that this is not in the real world, then it's certainly more fun and much more enjoyable.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's shocking that it's not a graphic novel or something that they're adapting. It really just seems like it would be, but it's like, it's crazy. They just keep coming up and they keep building on this thing in a movie world that just doesn't happen very often anymore.
Well, you know, and there was a film that came out about, well, no, actually it was last summer. It was last June, called Hotel Artemis. Did you see Hotel Artemis?
I wanted to see it. I never got around to it.
So the problem with Hotel Artemis is a lot of people say, well, it seems like it could take place in the John Wick world. It seems like it exists because, you know, in John Wick, you have the Continental, which is a hotel for assassins. And basically the whole idea of Hotel Artemis is that it is it's a hospital, I believe. It's a hospital for criminals, basically. And I think the big problem with it, why a lot of people, well, me personally, why I didn't really care for it is because, like I said, you had John Wick 1 that kind of set the ground, you know, set the stage for what was coming and, you know, set the world up for what was to come in John Wick 2 and John Wick 3. And the problem with Hotel Artemis, it was jumping right ahead into John Wick 2 world. And it's like, you can't really do that. Like, you know, John Wick, you know, it had one movie to kind of establish itself and to kind of gain this goodwill and everything. And then Hotel Artemis is just jumping into this world, expecting you to go along with it. And it didn't really work.
You got to put in work.
First. Exactly. And it didn't really, the payoff was not that great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. You know, I just remembered I did actually have one other puzzle piece. I might as well bring it up real quick. This is like more of like one of our buckets, except for the thing is I could only think of one movie. And maybe you'll think of one that could fit in this. But movies where the villain is a fan of the hero. And the one I thought of was Kick-Ass 2. I don't know if you could think of any that also do that, but Mark Dacascos' character, so funny the way that he's, you know, is just a straight up fan of John Wick. And I thought that it was so well done. And some of those lines, you know, it was a great fight.
Oh, man.
You know, that's just really, really, really fun. Just really fun.
Yeah, boy, it's I don't have anything now, but as soon as we get finished recording, it's probably going to come to me and then I'll text you and it'll come to me. You know, I will say I do have hope for my boy Lundgren, you know, and his fellow compatriot Jean-Claude Van Damme, because like I said, the fact that they cast Mark Dacascos, you know, in a big budget film like this gives me hope that obviously they left it open for a John Wick 4. And if John Wick 4 does extremely well, then let's face it, we're probably going to get a 5. I mean, even Keanu Reeves, I think he went on the record saying that as long as his body still allows it, he's going to keep on making these films. And so I have hope and I have faith that they may find a role for a guy like Jean-Claude Van Damme, and they may find another role for a guy like Dolph Lundgren. I mean, if not, you know, as a main heavy, then maybe as like a mentor, maybe as like a figure from a member of the high table, if you will, that they have to come across. I mean, I think the fact that that these guys are, you know, like I said, going back and hiring people like Franco Nero and, you know, and Mark Dacascos, you know what? And I mean, this is going to be one of the things I was going to say at the end, but the writer of this film, Derek Kolstad, he wrote a film for Dolph Lundgren called The Package, that stars Dolph Lundgren and Steve Austin. So yeah, I mean, I think it could happen, and I'm not counting it out just yet.
I would not be surprised one bit, because they're going for action. It's kind of action history, action cinema just wrapped up in like trying to make it its purest thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I don't see why they wouldn't be going and trying to get people like that for it. And quite frankly, I think he would fit really well in this whole universe. I think I could totally picture Dolph in this universe.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, me personally, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking I could see Dolph. I mean, he's played the bad guy so much that I'm kind of like, he can do other things than being the bad dude. But I think Dolph would be amazing if he was like the Lawrence Fishburne character. Obviously they already have, you know, that role figured out, but I think it'd be great if, maybe, you know, Lundgren would play like a wise old sage in some kind of way that, the Wick has to, form an alliance with.
Sure.
And I think Jean-Claude, he would be an amazing bad guy. I mean, how cool would it be if he was like the second in command of the high table or something like that. You know what I mean? I think that, That's something that'd be pretty cool.
I'm in 100%.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just realized I haven't done the finished puzzle, so I might as well do that, and then we'll get any other thoughts that we have about the movie. So the finished puzzle for John Wick 3 Parabellum includes Game of Death, Enter the Dragon, the Raid series, The Night Comes for Us, the Mission Impossible series, Smoke and Aces, Don't Breathe, the Evil Dead series, and Kick-Ass 2. So any other thoughts about this movie that you had?
You know, the other thing I just want to throw out there real quick is, if you take a look at the Die Hard franchise, and I think, you know, I think one of the things about the Die Hard franchise that has brought people back, the fact, I mean, if you look at it, well, I don't really like to count the fourth and the fifth one, but I guess you kind of have to. but the thing about the Die Hard franchise that I think is so cool and so appealing is that you have Bruce Willis's character, John McClane, who is a regular guy, a regular everyman, and the beating he takes. I mean, that's the thing. If you look at every Die Hard movie, it's always the same thing. It is his character going through an adventure. He's charting. Well, in the first one, he's going around a building. The second one, it's throughout an airport. The third one, it's, you know, throughout the city of New York, but it's all over the course of a single day. And if you take a look at his character from the beginning of the film to the end of the film, it's amazing because the beating that he takes is really interesting. He starts out at the beginning of the film relatively clean cut, but by the end of the film, you pretty much see the deterioration of a man. I mean, he is just, by the end of the film, he's beaten, his shirt is torn, you have sweat stains, you have blood all over him. I mean, but he is still surviving, he is still kicking. And I think that's one of the things, I mean, maybe not it's fully consciously that that they're trying to do with the Wick franchise, but that's one of the things that I like about it is maybe it's not taking place over the course of a single day, but if you think about it, John Wick is pretty much wearing the same suit throughout the entire film, and it's the same thing. He has taken beating after beating, and you just see that suit in his body just getting, again, deteriorated. you know, the sweat stains, the blood, but he is still moving forward to the end. And so I'm not going to say he's exactly like John McClane, but I think just that whole motif and that whole kind of dynamic that they're providing to the character is very similar.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. It's a really good comparison. It's and yeah, I mean, these are, we are going to be, I think, looking back at this series with the same kind of fondness as we do the Die Hard, at least those first few Die Hard movies. Yeah. Hopefully the John Wick movies continue in the right direction. They certainly seem to be like they're going to. So I had two last thoughts I wanted to bring up about the movie. The first one, I just thought it was interesting. It seems like for the most part, this movie is being very well received. The one thing that I keep seeing, though, people criticizing is about just the insane level of violence that it has gotten to. And I'm perfectly okay with that. I'm a fan of violent movies. I don't think that they're causing society great damage or anything like that. But I do think it's hilarious that we also seem to be in a moment where the world has decided that Keanu Reeves is like the nicest guy in the world and like one of the best, nicest celebrities, and that he is the face of this movie that is so unbearably violent for some people. I just think that's a really funny thing that it works out.
Well, and he's love him or hate him. And, you know, I know people love to crack jokes about his acting style, but he must have a really good agent, or he is extremely business savvy. Because, I mean, if you look at his next couple films, yeah, he has this crazy violent action film that he's done, but he always seems to sandwich these films in between, you know, other more lighthearted fare. I mean, just last year, he had a film that he did that came out with Winona Ryder called Destination Wedding, which was like a romantic comedy. And then just a couple days ago, he released, he's not a main character, a main role, but he is showing up in a film that's going to be on Netflix. I don't know if you saw the trailer for it, but it's a romantic comedy. And the name is now escaping me, but it's with, she's an Asian American comedian. She has that Netflix special called Baby Cobra, I want to say. But anyway, it's her, and then
Ali Wong, right?
Yes. Ali Wong. Yeah, she's in it, and then the guy from that sitcom Fresh Off the Boat is the other love interest. But he has a little role in that one, and then he's going to be apparently coming back for Bill and Ted 3. You know what I mean? And so, like I said, here's a guy. Yeah, like I said earlier, he's reinvented the action genre, but he's no dummy either. He's also, you know, doing some more lighthearted, you know, fair, diversifying himself to where he's not fully getting pigeonholed into the action genre. So you got to give him credit for that.
Absolutely. The other thing I was going to say, and especially since this has been a really fun conversation so far, we're going to be closing up in a minute, but I think the John Wick franchise is the newest thing, and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier about how this has influenced a lot of recent action movies. I think this is the newest thing we could do a Breaking It Apart episode on, you know, because these movies really have inspired a lot of the like last 5 years of action movies. And I think whereas normally with the Breaking It Apart series, where we go backwards and look at an older movie and look at what movies were inspired by it, you know, usually you have to go back far in order to do that. But I think that we could like seriously have an entire conversation about movies that were inspired by this John Wick series.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, like I said, the impact, like I think I texted you earlier, the influence and the impact that this film has had and is currently having on the genre is unreal. And so, you know, me personally, I think back in 1999, when everything was trying to kind of copy and mirror The Matrix, I think that kind of wore out its welcome after about a year. But me personally, I mean, I love it. I mean, I liked Atomic Blonde much more so than I really thought I would. And a lot of that, I mean, the extended fight scene, that one take fight scene in the film, it, you know, is worth the price of admission alone. So, yeah, I think we're going to be seeing much more.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope they do a similar thing with Halle Berry's character.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd love it if we could get Jean-Claude, if he could have his own John Wick film, or if Dolph Lundgren could have his own John Wick film, then I think that would, or excuse me, not an exact John Wick film, but something that kind of mirrors that same style. I think that would be really cool. So, yeah, there's still time.
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. Sean, you got any other movie that you saw recently that you'd like to recommend?
Oh, man. Well, there was John Wick 3. well, I guess if we're going to continue with it, Keanu Reeves has one that just came out a couple weeks ago on DVD and VOD called Replicas. I don't know if you remember when that came out back in January. It kind of came and went in theaters. Not really an action film, more a sci-fi drama, but, it's not terrible. It actually has some, interesting, thought-provoking, moral issues within it that I thought was interesting. So, if you're in the mood for some more Keanu, yeah, he has one out, about human cloning called Replicas.
Nice. Yeah. My dad liked it. I never got a chance to see it. It looked interesting. That's for sure. I know it got kind of mixed reviews, but I did want to try to check that out one of these days. Right on. And if you could let us know what's happening on your podcast.
Yeah, we're still moving forward. We're in the, I like to call it kind of the dark ages of Lundgren's career. You know, if you take a look at his career, his filmography from about 97 till about 2004-ish or so, I feel like not many producers and writers really knew what to do with Lundgren. And so he was getting what he could, and he was picking out some roles that were, you know, a little different and everything. But not many of the films, to be perfectly honest, in this period are that amazing. And so we're going through and kind of taking a look at him, kind of trying to figure out why Lundgren might have signed up for these roles. The most recent episode you joined me for, which was The Last Warrior, which was a bizarre film, to say the least. But pretty soon we have Jill the Ripper that he did, where he takes on a female serial killer, and it's extremely a wild one. So we're going to be recording that one here soon. So, please take a look if you're interested in Lundgren's career. Before he came back for Creed 2 and Aquaman, some really interesting stuff that we take a deep dive in and we discuss and take a look at. So it's been a ton of fun.
Beautiful. Well, hey, as always, thanks for being here, and love to have you back again sometime.
Hey, most definitely. I'll do anything else. I'm not just relegated to action. So if you do have a romantic comedy or something like that, nice, that you need my perspective on, please give me a shout.
We'll find something for you.
All right, cool.
We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. My name is Taylor Eland, and I host a show called Just Think, where I look into philosophy, theology, and other scientific ologies to figure out the underlying workings of an argument. If you would like to learn something new every week while getting both sides of a theory, go ahead and check us out on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, and Google Podcasts, along with various other networks, on Sundays.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that conversation about John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. Go see that movie. It is so much fun. And you know, something I also wanted to bring up is I actually went and saw it a second time. The second time I saw it in 4DX at the new theater that opened up here at the Regal Red Rock in Las Vegas. 4DX is wild. That's all I can really say. It is a wild experience. It is unlike anything I've really been to before. It's basically like combining a movie theater with a roller coaster or like a motion simulator ride. I mean, during these fight scenes, when he punches someone into a wall, your entire seat shifts and moves to the left, like, well, it's like leaning over to the left, and then all the way to the right, and back and forth, and jumping all over the place, and it follows some of the camera pans. And then when you're out in the rainy New York City streets, it's actually raining on your seat, and you're getting wet. And then there's a lot of bullets in this movie, and so you get, like, there's, like, these little propeller things that are shooting air, like, past your ear, so it's, like almost like the bullet is flying by your head. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's very fun. You know, I don't know, I go see 4DX movies all the time, but for a movie like this, it was definitely something worth checking out. And I'm actually thinking about maybe going back for Godzilla. That could be fun. I could see 4DX Godzilla being a real blast. And everybody in the theater was cracking up and laughing and, you know, at all the all those 4DX effects. I mean, it was definitely a fun time. You be ready, though, to be shaking around quite a bit. So that brings us to the end of our conversation about John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. I do want to remind you all to please make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, we'd love to hear from you. You can rate and review us on iTunes. 5 stars would be amazing. And you could also just get in touch directly. You can email me at bydavidrosen@gmail.com or just tweet at us at PiecingPod or join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, a movie discussion group, where the conversation about John Wick and all the other movies we talk about continues. So I really had a great time doing this episode, but I do think, especially with John Wick being such a dog movie, I think it's a good moment to mention something I've been going through here at home that I haven't really talked about, but I tweeted about it once or twice, but our dog Sadie is not doing so well. She has kidney failure, and we're doing everything we can to try to save her. And it's been a really hard couple of weeks, and I didn't know if I'd really talk about it on here or not, or, you know, just keep it private. But the reason I am bringing it up, partially because John Wick is a dog movie, so it makes sense to talk about my pups. And we do have 2 dogs, Sadie and Harvey, for those of you who don't know. But also, we have an album coming out, and it's I don't even know how to describe the feeling that, you know, we might lose her before the album comes out, but we have an album coming out called The Pup Pups that is partially sung by the dogs and their voices, and the rest of the songs are sung by me about the dogs, and it's just like a fun novelty album of dog songs and cat songs. And so I figured John Wick being a big movie about a dog-loving character, and me being a dog-loving character, and our dog, Sadie, going through what she's going through, I figured I would close out the episode, as I always do with a song, with a song that's sung by Sadie on the album. The album's going to be called Who Wants Din Din. I'm not quite sure when it's coming out. It'll be sometime in the next few months. But this song is called Another Me and is sung by the Sadie pup. And I really hope we can get Sadie pup better. But, you know, at this point, we're doing everything we can, and we're just going to have to see what happens. But this is Another Me. Enjoy it. And I'm going to go see how Sadie's doing.
I'm sorry that I didn't sleep in bed last night. I'm sorry that I didn't do the things you said. I'm sorry that I went and stole some of your socks. And I hit them with me down underneath the bed. When you're yelling at me, you know that it's so mean. How come you never ever yell at the washing machine? Or the dryer when I steal your socks like every week? You can find more socks, but you never find another me. You can find more socks, but you never find another me. You can find more socks, but you never find another me. You can find more socks, but you never find another me. Sorry that you couldn't find things you need. I'm sorry that I hid them underneath the bed. But when you yelled at me, I peed and peed and peed, peed, peed. And I wish you'd just given me hugs and kisses instead. And you know that when I took them socks and you, well, it's because them socks they smell like you. And I guess I just wanted to be a little stinky too. Thank you.
and all points west.